Blog Talk Radio.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
State of Indiana, where Obama's ideals are not espoused, comes the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show as a means to tell all you liberals out there that you are wrong and we are right. My name is Kathy Henners, and you're listening to Hour One of the Show, where we do what we do best, tell you what the government is doing to this great nation with Obama and his minions. We're showing you ways to stop them by following the true law of the land, the Constitution. And now, heard through ConservativeNationMedia.com, here is your host from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world, Robert Garding.
Okay, we're back. you didn't get to hear my first little section here, so I will actually redo it. Sometimes as we peruse around the media to find out something to talk about on these shows, we come across something that is a really good idea. This one came from Arizona on Thursday. On that day, Arizona became the first state to enact a law that requires high school students to pass a U.S. citizenship test. I think that is something that is long, long overdue. I found the article on redflagnews.com, but its source was from the site eswan.com. That's B and then S-W-A-N-N.com. And here's what it said. On Thursday, Arizona became the first state to enact a law that requires high school students to pass a U.S. citizenship test on civics in order to graduate. According to KPHO Phoenix, the bill was approved in a, quote, swift action by the Arizona legislature, unquote, which comes as states around the country take up similar actions, which is a good thing. Welcome to the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, where we work to show you the America we are becoming and how to stop this socialistic demise with the voice of reason in this unreasonable world. NBC News reported that law required high school students to correctly answer 60 of 100 questions on the civics portion of the U.S. citizenship test, and that test is being pushed nationally by the Joe Fass Institute, which has set a goal of having all 50 states adopt this measure by 2017, the 230th anniversary of the U.S. Constitution. According to the Associated Press, the FAST Institute, which has the motto Patriotism Matters, created a civics institute to, quote, promote the test to state legislatures with the hope that students will be better prepared to be engaged citizens when they increase their understanding of government and what it's all about. Republican Governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, who is in favor of the bill, released a statement on Monday urging Congress to pass the bill. These are our children, he said. It's not long from now. It will be time for them to vote on who sits in your chairs and who stands at this podium. Now, don't you think that is a good idea? And I will start all over with my bumper music, which I started earlier, but I had to stop for a few seconds. It seems that no matter how American people know that our government in Washington, D.C. isn't working for us anymore, and everyone seems to be wondering why after the last few elections we are now seeing things starting to happen. I always said that change would be an ongoing thing, and it wouldn't happen overnight. Well, it is, and it didn't. I mean, you think about it. This change is changing things that has been going on for over a century now, probably. But things are starting to happen. Change is coming. Bobby Jindal this week spoke on the subject of Islamism, and he had it right. From the American Liberty Gazette, I found this article that came from the Daily Caller, and it said, Jindal's brilliant take on radical Islam. Let's be honest here. Islam has a problem. Those are key sentences in an incredibly hard-hitting speech that Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal will give in London on Monday. It is the toughest speech I have read on the whole issue of Islamic radicalism and its destructive, murdering, barbarous ways which are upsetting the entire world. Early in the speech, Jindal says he's not going to be politically correct, and he uses the term radical Islamists without hesitation, placing much of the blame for the Paris murders and all radical Islamist terrorism on a refusal of Muslim leaders to denounce these acts. Now, isn't that the truth? Jindal says, quote, Muslim leaders must make clear that anyone who commits acts of terror in the name of Islam is in fact not practicing Islam at all. If they refuse to say this, then they are condoning these acts of barbarism. There is no middle ground. Unquote. Then he adds specifically, Muslim leaders need to condemn anyone who commits these acts of violence and clearly state that these people are evil and are enemies of Islam. Well, they're really not, because Islam teaches this. You can go to the Quran and read it in their version of the Bible, which was written by a criminal, in his words, not God's. But he adds that they must stand up and loudly proclaim that these people are not martyrs who will receive a reward in the afterlife, and rather they are murderers who are going to hell. Now, that is really true. If they refuse to do that, then they're part of the problem. There's no middle ground here. I want to know who in the Muslim community in the United States has said this. Which leaders? I don't normally cover this beat, so I may well have missed it. Hence, I ask readers to tell me. So if so-called American Muslim leaders have said what Governor Jindal is saying, they haven't. And by the way, what Bobby Jindal is saying is very similar to what Egyptian President al-Sisi said earlier in the year to a group of Muslim imams. Said al-Sisi, it's inconceivable that the thinking we hold most sacred should cause the entire Ummah, or in Islamic world, to be a source of anxiety, danger, killing, and destruction for the rest of the world. Then he asks, how is it possible that 1.6 billion Muslims should want to kill the rest of the world's inhabitants? That is 7 billion. So that by themselves they may live. He concludes, if this is not changed, it may eventually lead to the religion's self-destruction. That's President al-Sisi of Egypt, and I believe that is which I believe has the largest Muslim population in the world. And what Jindal and al-Sisi are saying is not so different from the thinking of French intellectual Bernard Henry Levy, writing in the Wall Street Journal. He calls the Charlie Hebdo murders the Churchillian movement of France's Fifth Republic. He essentially says France and the world must slam the useful idiots of a radical imam, Islam, immersed in the sociology of poverty and frustration. He adds, those whose faith is Islam must proclaim very loudly, very often, and in great numbers, their rejection of this corrupt and abject form of theocratic passion. Islam must be freed from radical Islam. Well, I have to come back and say this again. Radical Islam and Islam are the same thing. To do is read the Quran and you'll see it. It's in their Bible. Their Bible tells them to kill anyone who does not believe as they do. And if they don't kill them, then they need to reform them, convert them. And most Christians won't convert if they know what's going on. So three very different people, a young southern governor who may run for president, the political leader of the largest Muslim population in the world, and a prominent Western European intellectual are saying that most of the problem and most of the solution rests with the people of the Islamic religion themselves. If they fail to take action, the radicals will swallow up the whole religion and cause the destruction of the entire Middle East and possibly large swaths of the rest of the world. Now, this is true, but they don't see it this way. And if it was really true that most Muslims don't believe this way, then why aren't they standing up and saying, now, wait a minute, this needs to stop? They aren't, because they believe that way. The return of CNN is coming, and it's coming rather soon from what I have heard. But other than this show, you will also be treated with the conservative wisdom from Duke Brooks, our leader with his show, Radio Free America. Duke got his conservative roots and anti-communism put in his DNA from his parents, who were friends with Whitaker Chambers, Joe McCarthy, and Bill Buckley. So what would you expect? There's no truth to the old rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss' photo on it, but that would be cool if he did. When CNN returns, you will get your old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, the right one, and Wiener Flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks. Stay tuned for the dates and times this great show returns, along with Conservative Nation Media and other shows that will be with them. You will hear all about it here on the new Wise Conservatism radio show, the continuing of CNN during the downtime, Radio Free America and Conservative Nation Media, where America will always win. From the opening monologue of Fox News' The Five, Greg Gutfeld accused the cowering establishment of suffering from truthophobia, being the truth about radical Islam. The impetus for the monologue was Bill Clinton's, yes, folks, that yippee is still around, that radical Islamists enjoy the world's greatest double standard by demanding tolerance while practicing intolerance. Praise Allah, Gutfeld said. A leader speaks truth, saying publicly what wimps say privately. I would say off with his head, but there are those that would take it seriously. He continued. Of course, his obvious point is a jarring departure from a cowering establishment who deny the obvious in favor of the big lie, the lie that it's not religion, stupid. It's based on grim assumptions of the West that you and I are armed with pitchforks, ready to chase innocent Muslims because of some bad apples. The double standard Clinton exposes drives its survival. After intolerance makes one country inhospitable, it moves elsewhere, and we let it. The one bag to check upon departure, and it spreads like a virus designed to erase its rivals. and it's real. Not like Islamophobia, that dying sneer against those who sound the alarm against evil. I call it truthophobia, the fear of the facts, as seething disciples accept violence as a path to nirvana, intimidating a fearful population of timid counterparts accepted by cowardly media. Trey Gowdy is in the news again. Remember these kind of politicians are the ones that we need to be following. This is the type of man who will be the end of the ones like Harry Reid, but only if we listen to what is being said by them. From Joe for America comes this one. Republican Representative Trey Gowdy has developed a guy who would blow a bunch of smoke up your backside, regardless of your title or how important you might think you are. Americans across the country have grown to love his dedication to conservative principles and his fiery skills as a prosecutor that he often uses to grill corrupt members of Congress. And I've enjoyed watching him do this. It is something that is pleasing to this patriotic American. In short, there's nothing like watching a Trey Gowdy speech, because when he takes the mic, you better believe there's going to be fireworks. And that's exactly what happened when Gowdy got up to speak before Congress Wednesday morning, totally destroying the president on his usurpation of power with the executive order he issued on immigration. Here's a few snippets from that speech. Representative Trey Gowdy is a force to be reckoned with, and this is from Mad World News, proved just that Wednesday morning with quite the riveting speech. In a move to block Obama's extreme executive overreach regarding immigration, Gowdy is now demanding that his fellow congressmen use their position of power to stop the president's blatant disregard for the Constitution. Quote, President Obama announced one of the largest constitutional power grabs ever by a chief executive. He declared unilaterally that almost 5 million undocumented aliens will receive deferred action under some newfangled definition of prosecutorial discretion. Madam Speaker, not only that, not only escaping consequences, he has decided to bestow benefits such as work authorization and immigration benefits. That document is clear, time-tested, and true. And it says that this body passes laws and is the responsibility of the chief executive, Madam Speaker, to make sure that those laws are faithfully enforced. But, Madam Speaker, this is not a fight between Republicans and Democrats. It's not even a fight over immigration reform. This is a fight over whether this branch of government will ever find the courage to stand up for itself. The same document that this and all presidents swear to defend gives this body certain tools like the power of the purse. And it's about damn time we use that tool. So I would ask you to oppose this motion to recommit, support the underlying bill, and I will yield back my time, unquote. I'll tell you, I am in awe of Trey Gowdy's, the Trey Gowdy's and the Ted Cruz's of our government, for they stand up and say what needs to be said without any thought to the fact that their own party will most likely go against them along with everyone else. They say what they say because it is the right thing and it needs to be said. We need more representatives like this, and we are getting them, slowly but surely. It is like I have said earlier in this program, change will not happen overnight. We have to stay patient. And we also have to watch the condition of this country. There is a lot going on in that arena, after all. And welcome to everybody who has showed up here. Free Gitmo Captive, one of these people that Obama released from Guantanamo, is an ISIS base in Afghanistan. And our president says that nothing he is doing is hurting America. Oh, really? This article from Judicial Watch states, as President Obama frees droves of terrorists, including five Yemeni this week from the U.S. military prison in Guantanamo, news reports confirm that a Gitmo alum who once led a Taliban unit has established the first Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, base in Afghanistan. His name is Mullah Abdul Rauf, and international and domestic media reports say he's operating in Helmand province, actively recruiting fighters for ISIS. Citing local sources, a British newspaper writes that Rauf set up a base and is offering good wages to anyone willing to fight for the Islamic State. Commander during the Taliban's 1996 to 2001 rule of the Afghanistan area, according to the intelligence reports. After getting captured by U.S. forces, he was sent to Gitmo in southeast Cuba, but was released in 2007. Ralph's Department of Defense Joint Task Force Guantanamo file describes him as being closely associated with several senior-level Taliban commanders and leaders. It also says that Ralph admitted involvement with the production and sales of opium, as well as associations with criminal elements within the Taliban and the Northern Alliance. From the file, due to recent findings that detainees may have had more important role within the Taliban than previously thought, detainees' intelligence value has been updated from low to medium due to this possible knowledge of, one, Taliban leadership, and two, Taliban command and control. I think that what we need to start doing, people, is holding Obama accountable for the things that he is doing. And you have been listening to Conservative Nation Media and the new Wise Conservatism radio show, and I'm your host, Robert, the proud American infidel, guarding. Our call in number is 718-305-7176 if you want to join the fun. But actually, I don't even know why I said that, because we only got a couple of minutes left. But finally, from the Daily Signal comes our last story titled, Call It What It Is, Islamic Extremism and Terrorism, a commentary written by Walter Lohmann, who is the director of the Heritage Foundation's Asian Studies Center. On Monday, Louisiana governor and likely 2016 presidential candidate Bobby Jindal will speak in London at the Henry Jackson Society about the treat of Islamist terrorism. It will be, in his own words, blunt and clear. You cannot remedy a problem, he says in his prepared remarks, if you will not name it and define it. Jindal, as they say in London, is spot on. Several years ago, the Heritage Foundation launched a multi-year open-ended initiative called Islam and Liberty. The objective was to document and analyze the threat that political Islam poses to liberty around the world and make the recommendations for how the U.S. ought to address it. The initiative has produced a number of major research projects. Analysts initially looked at the religious liberty in the largest Muslim-majority countries in the world, Egypt, Indonesia, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Additionally, we have published other reports to expand on the recommendations and to address changing circumstances and trends in particular countries. Heritage has hosted multiple speakers and guest researchers over the year, Muslim and non-Muslim, on the topic. Most recently, Heritage released Pursuing a Freedom Agenda Amidst Rising Global Islamism and held a related public program to promote it. The report itself took more than a year of consultation to produce. It was thoroughly reviewed by a range of experts, both internally and externally. Very early on in the Islam and Liberty Initiative, we rested with what to call the threat. We settled on Islamist extremism and terrorism. We did so because, on one hand, through our experience with Muslim friends and colleagues over the years, we know that the threat to liberty is not from Muslims because they are Muslims. The threat emanates from a particular extreme interpretation of faith, essentially a violent political ideology cast in religious terms. On the other hand, the threat cannot be honestly separated from its religious context. ISIS and Al-Qaeda and the myriad of other violent Muslim extremist groups around the world may well be cults of murder masquerading as piety. However, we are not theologians or theologians. It is up to us to say what Islam is and what it is not. When people kill or tyrannize populations in the name of religion, we must take them at their word. We must, because we are engaged in a war of ideas. We cannot combat a tactic, terrorism. Extremism alone is meaningless. Calling the threat Islamist allows us to distinguish friend from foe and empower the good guys. There are Muslims among our friends in this fight and enemies among the non-Muslims. In the end, we only aid our enemies by not calling the threat what it is. We not only have got to acknowledge the fact that Islamists have declared war on all of us, but we also have to realize the Muslims are in it too. If they weren't, they would be speaking out against what Islam is doing, but most of them don't. A good example of this quote I found the other day that explains it all very quickly. A radical Muslim is one who chops the heads of the infidels. A moderate Muslim is one who holds the feet of the victim. Thank you for listening today with this edition of the NWCR show for this January the 17th of 2016. Keep up the fight for America, folks. She needs us all. And we will be back again next week to continue the battle. And we hope that God blesses all of you. And now I will say God bless you and have a good day and enjoy the outro song from Bob Seger called Ride Out. God bless you all.